If it's happening in sports in Saskatchewan, we've got it covered. The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. On your radio at 620 CKRM and online at sportscage.com.
The Sports Cage brought to you by Saskatchewan Lotteries, bringing communities together. Sask Lottery products fund over 12,000 sports, culture, and recreational groups across Saskatchewan. And what a show we have planned for you this afternoon and later this afternoon, if you put it that way. Off the top, we're going to talk to the voice of the Swift Current Broncos, Matt Barrett, of course. Game 3 of the Western Hockey League East semifinal between the Broncos and Warriors goes tonight with the series tied at 1. What a wacky series it will be. At the bottom of the hour, 3:30, Brett Lawther joins us. Of course, the Rough Rider place kicker. Brett's 33 years of age, but his stats aren't tailing off at all. Still kicking strongly for the Rough Riders. Arash Madani will join us at 4 o'clock. Arash will talk about a big Olympic event he attended today in Toronto. We're going to talk about the Paris Olympics and a few other interesting subjects that coming at 4. At 4:30, Glenn Suter, of course, TSN analyst and color man, will be discussing how he studies other color men in the U.S. and the technologies they use. Very interesting conversation because Glenn Suter is sort of like a producer, really, as much as a color man. Daniela Ponticelli of TSN joins us at 5. Daniela, of course, was in Utica, New York when the Canadian women won gold at the World Women's Hockey Championship. We're going to talk about women's sports. Caitlin Clark, the Iowa basketball star, do you see what she's getting paid? She's getting totally ripped off. It's not right. We'll talk to Daniela about that. Then at 5:30, a voice that hasn't been heard on these airwaves for a while, but you're going to hear him at 5:30, Lauren Harrison of the famous Harrison line is going to talk to us about his love of baseball, St. Louis Cardinals, and of course his longtime affiliation with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. How about that SJHL report? Game 7 tonight in Melfort. The Broncos and Mustangs, winner take all, as Humboldt wins Game 6 in the second overtime period to force Game 7. And now joined in Saskatoon by Derek Bidwell, a former Saskatoon Hilltop, a longtime sportscaster. He's got a long resume in this business and a very impressive one. On top of that, Derek will be the on-field reporter during Rough Rider games this coming season, working along Dave Thomas and Luke Wellander. And I've always said, Derek, that you learn more about a football game on the field than you'd ever know off the field.
Hey, Don, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can.
Great. We're doing things for the first time.
Right.
In Saskatoon, so we just want to make sure that everything is coming through loud and clear. This is great to be on the air with you. Yes, indeed, you can learn, I think, the most from being on the sidelines. I love that perspective. Before I moved back to Saskatoon, my hometown, home province, and hometown of Saskatoon, and home province of Saskatchewan, I was in Calgary for about 10 years, and I was on the sidelines for one of those arch enemies, the red and white, the Calgary Stampede.
Yeah.
And I loved being on the sidelines there. I was telling a little story when we did our launch, and I don't know if you caught it, but maybe I'll reiterate it again. Hopefully our listeners didn't catch it the first time. But when I was on the sidelines for my first game with the Calgary Stampeders, they were taking on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And you know, Don, when the Riders travel very well, and in Calgary, we called it the Christmas game because in the stands would be red, green, and white, of course, because yes, so many Rider fans were there. Anyway, I'm on the sidelines, and I just lose myself in the moment for a little bit. I'm wearing Stampeder stuff. I'm wearing Stampeder clothing because I'm on the sidelines with the Stampeders. But in just a moment of the game, I can't remember who threw it and who caught it, but he throws a bomb, the quarterback for the Riders, and the receiver leaps out and makes a great catch. And I just naturally, being from Saskatchewan, went, yeah! I'm on the side, and then I realized right away, oh, and I was like, yeah! Oh! So good defensive play. I didn't know what.
Oh, yeah.
I was scrambling to try to make up for the fact that I was cheering for the Riders being on the sidelines. And Jay McNeil, the now president of the Calgary Stampeders,
right,
who I knew a little bit, he tapped me on the back and just said in my ear really quick, he just said, "Bitch, remember where you are," and gave me a smile. He basically gave me a free one to let it go by. But yes, being on the sidelines is amazing. I'm looking forward to it very much, being a part of the broadcast team for Rider games and being down on the sidelines and offering plenty of perspective throughout the games.
Well, I certainly look forward to listening to you, Derek, on Rider broadcast, because you've got a lot of experience and the insight you'll bring along with Dave Thomas and Luke Mullinder will be sensational. Joining us now on Sports Cage, Derek and I, is the voice of the Swift Current Broncos, Matt Barrett, and that's Matt with one T. And of course, as I said earlier, a huge game in Speedy Creek tonight, game three of the Western Hockey League East semifinal between the Broncos and Warriors. Series tied at one. Now, Matt, before we get going on this series, and for those who don't know, if we want to listen to your call tonight, where do we find you?
Yeah, you find it on Country 94.1 here in Swift Current. And yeah, or if you've got those WHL Live packages, those work too. But yeah, that's where you can find me tonight, I guess.
Right. Now, before we get into the series again, Matt, tell us about your background. How did you end up in Swift Current?
Yeah, I mean, born and raised Edmonton boy, went to Mount Royal University in Calgary to do broadcasting, and spent the last 6 years in Melfort, calling games for the Melfort Mustangs, who, by the way, have game 7 tonight at the SK Shelf. Shout out to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then, you know, this summer, you know, managed to be lucky enough that the Swift Current Broncos wanted me here, and, you know, couldn't be more excited to just be part of this playoff run, and, you know, it's been an awesome ride so far.
Absolutely wacky. And when you think about it, 2-7-2 games, one favoring Swift Current, and then game two favoring Moose Jaw. Do you think that's over with? I mean, do you foresee things will tighten up tonight?
I would think so. I mean, I can't remember two more similar yet completely different hockey games that I've been a part of in a playoff before. And, you know, maybe it was both teams trying to, you know, find things out and figure things out. But, you know, it's hard to say, and I would expect to, you know, a few much closer games these next two nights and throughout the rest of this series, you know, as teams kind of lock things down and kind of learn from the positives and the negatives of, you know, Friday and Saturday, which I guess were exciting if you were a fan watching of either club on either night. But, you know, I'm sure the coaches might be pulling their hair a little bit after those two.
Well, it's interesting with two blowouts. I was impressed, actually, Matt, with both coaches, Swift Current's Terrace McEwen and Moose Jaw's Mark O'Leary. A lot of coaches in the playoffs, they'll try to send a message when they're being blown out, get into some rough stuff, try to intimidate, but neither coach did that, and I applaud it.
Yeah, it's good to see that, you know, there's maybe a, you know, probably a mutual respect there from the clubs. You know, it was a nasty couple of games. The rivalry is there, but you know, it's one of those things where I think both teams know that there's a bigger you know, bigger goal at stake here than just, you know, the series or even just the game, you know, in a smaller sample.
Right. Derek, any comments from Saskatoon?
Yeah, Matt, I was just gonna say, set the table for game three, obviously completely opposite outcomes in game one and game two. How do you see this going in game three? I know where your heart lies or where you're hoping it goes, but maybe how you see this one unfolding.
Yeah, I mean, the Broncos are going to be, I think, pretty energetic and pretty hyped up. It's been 16 days since they last played a game here on home ice, you know, since game two of that Lethbridge series. So, you know, the fans are going to be rowdy tonight. It's going to be a sold-out Innovation Plex. And, you know, the players on the Broncos side are going to be super, you know, amped up for it, I think, and that's going to, you know, bode them well. They've been super, you know, good at home this year. They have, you know, very rarely, you know, dropped, you know, their ball here at home. And, you know, I expect them to kind of, you know, hold that home ice. And but you never count out Moose Jaw. That's a good team over there. And, you know, a lot of talent there. You can't take your eye off the prize for a second against those guys, because they will jump on you. And, you know, the Broncos have to be responsible in their own zone and make sure guys like Savoy and Jaeger and Furkus have, have a difficult time, you know, trying to put the puck in the net and get into the middle of the ice, because if you allow them to do that, they're going to hurt you more times than you'd like.
Well, yeah, Matt, you mentioned that there's, you know, the big names with the Moose Jaw Warriors, of course, and you have to watch them because they can light things up real quick. One thing I like about this time of the year, of course, no matter what you're talking about, you mentioned the SJHL, you're talking the Milford Mustangs, now we're talking about the WHL, or even if you're talking about the NHL, when you get into this time of the year, the second season, it gets real exciting. Are you feeling the hum, the buzz around the city for Broncos fans?
Oh, absolutely. It's unbelievable. You see Bronco signs, and people are painting their windows on their businesses, and people have their Bronco flags out. It's unbelievable. I mean, to see the community get behind this team, they've kind of been starving for that playoffs, right, since 2018. And, you know, they've taken it and run with it, and it's been, you know, every home game here has been a sellout so far, and I expect more of it, and the fans have really come out in droves. And even in Moose Jaw, there were, you know, a fair amount of Bronco fans there. The spattering of blue and green in the stands there in Moose Jaw was pretty crazy to see. So this community is getting behind the Broncos, and it's awesome to see.
Now, of course, game one, Matt, Broncos goalie Reid Dick was rock solid, all 6'5" of him. But in game two, well, you couldn't blame him for some of the goals, but he wasn't as sharp. In game two, he was pulled in favor of Joey Rocha. After that, Rocha was like a stone wall, made some incredible saves in the Bronco net. So what do you think is going to happen tonight with your goalie? Who's going to start?
I would assume it's going to be Reid Dick, and that's nothing to take away from Joey, who has been a consummate pro, sitting behind Reid and taking the starter's role when he's had to this year. But Reid's, you know, personally, I think he's one of the best goalies in the WHL, and he showed that, you know, all season long when he was healthy and kind of towards the end of the year. And I mean, you can't really blame him too much. Goalies are going to have off nights no matter what level you're at. And, he's not a guy that gets rattled very easily. So you can expect him to kind of, I think, regroup, recover, and kind of block out the noise. And he'll be back, pretty strong tonight, I would think. And there's the ridiculous T-shirts and the hashtag that's floating around. I assume that might be used a few times tonight, I would think.
Right. Now, it looks like almost a future NHL game between these two teams right now with how they've both stacked their rosters. I mean, you've got your captain, Owen Pickering, first rounder by Pittsburgh. You've got Connor Geeky, 11th overall to Salt Lake. I just said Salt Lake because it might as well. You've got Reid Dick, sixth rounder Boston. Josh Philman, sixth rounder Devils. Connor Fidston, Ducks, goes in the fifth round. Josh Davies, a sixth round by the Panthers. Ryan McCleary, Trent Sun. Of course, round 7 in Pittsburgh. Tyson Galloway, this is random, he went in round 5 to St. Louis. Jacob Dvorak, round 2 by LA a year ago. Moose Jaw's got 4 first rounders. They've got 2 or 3 second rounders. I mean, this really looks like, because they both built these teams up, it's going to end up being an incredible battle of wills.
Yeah, I mean, it very well could be. Both teams have that kind of, you know, all the logos next to their names on the lineup card, right? So, it's pretty neat to see all these, you know, likely future pro players playing in tonight's game and this series with, you know, even the number of first rounders that there are on both sides. And, I'm sure that all of the NHL clubs are going to be looking at tonight's contest, even with some of the draft eligible players that are, you know, playing in this series. And possibly, you know, some players down the road as well, and maybe some of the guys that aren't drafted as well, right? There's just so much depth on both sides that, it wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of, you know, future pro players on either of these rosters playing at the next level here in the next few years.
Okay, let's go up to Saskatoon. Derek?
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say, so Matt, because it was so high-scoring, lopsided, in the first two games, which is opposite of what's going on, but we'll get into it just a second here, what's going on with the other series involving Saskatchewan WHL team and the Saskatoon Blades and the Red Deer Rebels, which is very tight-checking and very close. But with the first two games being lopsided, one for each team, do you see this kind of slowing down and maybe being a little more tight-checking now and not being as I guess some willy-nilly or be some freewheeling hockey that we saw in the first few. Do you see it settling down and becoming a little more structured, if you will?
It's certainly possible, but I think you look at the same side, and that both these teams like to skate and like to, you know, get going, and you know, the Broncos create a lot of their offense off the rush, you know, as does Moose Jaw. And you know, when you say structured, I think we could see a little bit more of teams kind of getting back to their identity of how they want to play defensively, namely with the Broncos, and you know, Bill, you know, starting from their own zone and in front of their own net and working their way out and creating in transition that way. And you know, we may see more of that, and the Broncos might be able to do that a little bit more here at home. So you know, would I be surprised if there were some high scoring games? No. Would I be surprised if there was a few low scoring games in there? Not in the slightest at all. It's a series that could have anything and everything at the same time or on different nights. It's you know, it's pretty interesting, that's for sure.
Now Matt, you've been in Surfacurt for a little while. It's a smaller city, but it's home to quite a few former NHL players. You've got former Senator Zach Smith as an assistant coach for the Broncos. Mm-hmm. Defenseman Ryan McCleary, he's the son of former Montreal Canadian Trent McCleary. I don't know if Travis Moen still lives in Surfacurt, the former Duck and Hab, won a Stanley Cup in Anaheim. Do you rub shoulders with any of those guys?
Yeah, a little bit. Obviously, Zach, spent a lot of time around Zach, around the room and on the bus and all that. He's been an absolute unbelievable addition to this coaching staff, and he's a great, you know, person, human being, great family. So, you know, happy to have him back, you know, in the area and helping this team. And Trent's obviously the president of the club there. So, you know, he's, you know, awesome to chat with whenever I get the chance to. He's a busy man, but yeah. You know, able to chat with him when I'm able to. And yeah, Travis still kind of hangs around here a bit as well. So obviously them, and just, you know, a lot of not only NHLers but Broncos, I guess I could say legends or Broncos alum as well, that hang around a lot too. And you know, it's pretty awesome to see that, you know, a lot of them have been able to kind of stick around and continue to support this club as well.
Well, I was wondering if Ryan McCleary was the son of Trent McCleary. I thought likely. Then I looked at Ryan's picture. He's an exact double of his dad. It wasn't hard to figure out. I said, well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree there. And they look like twins, the dad and the son. But Trent McCleary, one of the funniest guys you can ever be around. That's for sure. Well, good luck to the Broncos tonight, Matt. I'm going to tune in for a little bit. And after the break, Derek Bidwell is going to talk to us about the series involving the Saskatoon Blades and Red Deer. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
The all-new Sports Cage is brought to you by Sherwood Co-op. From locally grown fresh produce, condiments, and Western Canadian beef, your barbecue tastes better when you shop at Sherwood Co-op food stores. The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. 620 CKRM.
And Don Hewitt back with the Sports Cage, brought to you by Sherwood Co-op. From locally grown fresh produce, condiments, and Western Canadian beef, your barbecue tastes better than ever when you shop at Sherwood Co-op food stores. Let's go back up to Saskatoon now with Derek Bidwell. And Derek, you were at both games in Saskatoon in the other East semifinal between the Blades and the Rebels. Boy, Saskatoon had to go to overtime to take a 2-0 series lead. What do you see at this point in that series?
Well, if you know, if Red Deer can get a victory tonight in Game 3, obviously anything can happen. But Saskatoon definitely deserved to win both those games. I mean, they won both those games, and there was no, the Rebels didn't get ripped off or anything like that. The Blades were definitely the better team, and they showed it, you know, I guess by heaps in the first one. They won 4-1 in the first matchup there, and that one wasn't even close. And it, in fact, it could have been a lot more lopsided for the Saskatoon Blades in Game 1 at Sastel Center in Saskatoon. Then in Game 2, the Rebels came out, and it was much closer, obviously, with the score being tied at 1 in regulation. But that was largely because of the amazing play of local goaltender Chase Wutzke, who's from just outside Saskatoon, played for the Saskatoon Contacts, his midget AAA hockey or U18 AAA hockey. And Chase Wutzke was amazing for the Rebels in that one. He kept him in the game. I think the Blades outshot him by around 50-20. So you can imagine how much of a good game Chase had. Wow. He, in fact, even got ran over in that game as well, too, which resulted in a major for the Blades. But he stayed in the game. He kept them in it right to the end, and then the Rebels committed a turnover coming out of their end in overtime, which the Blades then jumped on, and Sanderson buried it for the winner. So the Blades getting the 2-1 victory in overtime. Game 3 is tonight in Red Deer. Game 4 is Wednesday in Red Deer. If needed, Game 5 back in Saskatoon. But the better team, and they have been all year, and it shows in the standings, of course, the Blades are number one in that regard, are the Saskatoon Blades. They are such a strong team with so much depth, you know, with Don, that I don't see this going any other way for the Rebels, and to make it, you know, maybe a closer series, and so the Blades can come back here maybe and finish it off in Game 5 on Friday. You know, I hope that they can at least get a win. But the Saskatoon Blades really are a different type of team. There's levels to everything. You hear kids say that all the time. And there's levels to even these teams in the playoffs. And the Saskatoon Blades are at the top level right now. And in this particular matchup, I don't see it being close against the Rebels. But anything can happen. We will wait and see Game 3 tonight in Red Deer.
Well, thanks, Derek. And it certainly looks like the WHL East Final could very well be an all Saskatchewan affair, which would be really exciting. We'll be back shortly with Saskatchewan place kicker Brett Lawther. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
Back to the all new Sports Cage. Text 306-936-6262. 620 CKRM.
And Saskatchewan extraordinaire place kicker and 6-year rider Brett Lawther now joins us on Sports Cage. Brett, last season you connected on 81.8% of your field goal attempts, which is a good number, kicking in the swirling Saskatchewan wind. Swirling is being kind. Most of the time it blows in circles for you there, Brett. You nailed a 54-yarder last season. Twice in your career you've nailed it from 57 yards out. So at 33 years of age and looking at your stats, you haven't had any sort of tail off at all. What do you contribute to that?
I mean, just the people around me and the organization, really. Obviously got a really good support system with family, friends, my fiance, and everything like that. But the trainers, the work they do in their strength and conditioning coaches over the years, and our coaching for sure. And you know, each and every year you get a little older and there's some younger guys coming in, so just trying to keep up with the young guys is always fun, especially in the off season.
How much work have you been doing with your new strength coach, Dan Farthing?
A ton, honestly. As much as I can get in there and see him when I'm not in schools and traveling. You know, my legs are still pretty sore, honestly, from yesterday's workout and the work we did. So Dan's been great, great addition. Everyone, the new medical staff, coaches, I honestly can't say enough good things. I'm just so excited for the next couple of years here in Sask.
Now, last season, you had 4 special teams tackles. So in that regard, you seem to be getting younger because you're knocking people down.
No, I definitely don't want to be doing that. But, you know, pride myself a little bit, I guess, on playing some other positions in sports growing up, and got to make a tackle to try to prevent a touchdown and help try to win a game. I mean, getting the least amount of tackles every year, so I don't need to be praised for anything like that. The other guys are doing all the hard work out there. I'm just trying to put the ball where it's supposed to go. You know, want to obviously get that number up a little bit, but want to keep going out, especially this year, from some longer distances than we tried before to put points on the board. And also just
Dan Farthing, I know Dan well from his time here in Saskatoon, and tell him I say hello here. Anyway, Derek Bidwell from Saskatoon. So Brett, talk about the offseason. Before we start grilling you about the upcoming season, let's talk about the offseason. There's some hockey involved there. There was you at a Rush game that I saw throwing stuff into the stands and talking with the fans and signing autographs. Talk about the offseason and getting around Saskatchewan, as it seems you have.
Yeah, I mean, the offseason's been great. Honestly, it's more busier than in-season, so it's not really an offseason. I got to travel a bunch all over North America this year. I mean, I was at the Grey Cup in Hamilton for a week, went down to New York and New Jersey for a week there, spent some time with Korzak, some of my friends down there, met up with another buddy in Minnesota for some NFL, NHL games, and traveled, obviously, all over the province. I think I'm somewhere around 50 different schools all over the province. It's great to get down to Montana too. Mitch Pickton had his bachelor party there. I got home for Christmas to Nova Scotia, and traveling with the PA due to Palm Springs, and got to go to Jasper as well. And I'm off to New Orleans next week. So it's just basically been traveling, training, and trying to spread a good message in the school to the kids about mental health and wellness. And I mean, even this morning I was at a school out east here in Regina and was doing some readings and stuff to the kids. So no complaints over here. Ready to go for the season. Been training a lot with like Dan and trying to get there as much as I can. And exactly what you said, can't say enough good things about Dan and the work he's doing. He's going to have us really ready to go, and a really healthy season for the guys, I'm expecting.
Wow, you listed off a lot of fun places to go there. There was a bachelor party mentioned. There is New Orleans, as they say. Sounds like a not bad off-season. Back to going around and talking to the kids and going around to the schools, representing the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in this province where, of course, everyone loves the beloved Riders. Does it ever get old? I mean, when you walk in there, the smiles on the kids' faces, and they're so excited just to be amongst a member of the Riders and to talk shop, get their picture taken, get something signed. It's always got to really make your day.
Yeah, no, that definitely never gets old. The only thing's getting old is me. So getting in there, seeing the kids, they keep you young. It's a lot of fun, especially going to so many different areas in the province. You know, we're a community-owned team, and small way to try to give back a little, but it definitely reminds me of home. So I love getting out to everywhere in the province, but especially the small towns. And you know, everyone's looking forward to talking football and spreading a good message for the kids, letting them know that, you know, post-COVID and stuff, they had to deal with a lot of things that maybe us as adults didn't realize. I always say to kids, you know, COVID wasn't fun for anyone. It was difficult for everyone, but I think it was a lot tougher for kids, especially firsthand, having a sister that's pretty young, and tough for her why she couldn't understand to go to hockey and sports and see her friends and go to school and stuff. So just making sure the kids realize, you know, we're dealing with the same things they deal with each and every day. They're, you know, they're not alone no matter what you're going through, and trying to obviously promote reading and literacy and stuff like that. And I'd say, if anything, it's the opposite of getting old. Each and every day I get to go in there, it's a lot of fun for me. It puts a smile on my face, and I love getting out and visiting all the Rider fans across the province.
Now, yesterday, Brett, John Ryan announced that he was retiring from the NFL as a Seahawk. How did you feel when you heard about that?
Yeah, I've kind of knew that was John's plan a little bit for a while now. Obviously, there's nothing I can say that people don't know in this province about John, what a great person he is. Not only how good he was at football and punching the ball, but how much he gives back to, you know, the community of Regina, but not just here, wherever he's at. He's helped me so much in my career for the short time I got to spend with him, but I'm just super fortunate and lucky to even spend any time with him at all. And, you know, I miss him a lot, but we stay in touch too. And, you know, he's just such a great guy and had such an influence on me, especially, you know, come out here a year or so in, get to spend time with a guy that's won Super Bowls and played in some big games, and really was a calming influence for me, especially, you know, how great of a holder he was and how reliable Jorgen has been for me. So You know, there's nothing I can really say that people don't already know about John, but when I heard the news and it was finally announced, I was obviously pretty happy for him.
Hey, Brett, speaking of Jorgen Hughes, of course, the very reliable and consistent long snapper for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. A guy that calls Saskatoon home for part of the season. So I think he kind of goes back and forth to Regina and Saskatoon. But speaking of Saskatoon, I, of course, am here. We are all excited for the Riders to be returning soon. It's April. It seems like this year is going so quickly. May is right around the corner. And when May comes around, well, next thing you know, the Rider rookie camp is going to start. And right after that, you all will be here. Talk about rolling into this season and the excitement of it. The new roster every year. You think there's new possibilities. Everybody's undefeated, so everybody is optimistic about the upcoming season. So just talk about where we are right now, rolling into the training camp back here in Saskatoon.
Yeah, obviously. Sorry, it broke up a little. I think I caught most of the question there, but really excited to get up to Saskatoon. That's part of the reason why we have the hockey game up there as well. You know, it's a community-owned team, so we're trying to make sure we get out everywhere across the province. But Saskatoon's a great city, a great place to have camp every year. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there each and every year, especially in the CFL. It's a completely new season. I think at this time last year, no disrespect to Montreal or anything, but they definitely weren't one of the favorites to kind of win the Grey Cup. And then you get hot at the right time, you're healthy at the right time, and you've seen what they did. So I think for us too, I can't put into words enough how great the new staff's been in the building, kind of the buzz around the team, and you know, just the new, everything's just kind of new, but having some former players that are coaches and stuff as well, I think it's going to serve the guys really well. You know, we got had a really good free agency, probably going to have a really good draft here coming up, and I really think the golden years of playing Rider football are going to be the next 3 to 4 years here. I mean, that's why I want to get kind of a long-term deal done. I truly believe in what J.O. and the rest of our organization are kind of putting together and planning here. So we're looking forward to camp. We're looking forward to each and every step of the way, the process that it takes throughout the whole season to kind of get to November and hopefully get back into playoffs, and then anything can happen from there. But it's going to be a big year here in Sask, and I don't want to get too ahead of myself and predict some stuff, but I know that it's going to be a really good season, and we're going to be right back to where we should have been.
Well, Brett, I'm going to ask you after the break what you meant by that golden years. That was a very interesting term. Hang on the phone if you could with us. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
Don't miss a minute of the all-new Sports Cage. Podcasts are posted at sportscage.com. 620 CKRM.
And it's Don Hewitt along with Derek Bidwell back with the Cage. Text or call us on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line 306-936-6262 or toll free 1-866-767-0620. The text line brought to you by Capital Ford Lincoln, Saskatchewan's number one Ford retailer. CapitalFordLincoln.com. Now, interesting, Brett, you said the golden age now of the Rough Riders coming up. I loved it. I love that you said that. Now, how much has Corey Mace got to do with that, and how much does what General Manager Jeremy O'Day did in free agency have to do with that?
I mean, I think they obviously have a major part in everything going on here. The GM and the head coach of teams, they obviously have a lot of responsibility and can really shape and mold a team. But at the end of the day, I think especially now, it's going to be on the players, especially in the room, kind of setting the culture, how things need to be done. And I think things are in place that we can actually do that. So it takes everyone. It's not just one person. I know they would say the same thing too, but it's going to take everyone in the whole organization, all the fans, the whole community, own team aspect. We all got to be rowing the same boat this year and the next 2 years going forward to kind of get there and get the opportunities that we had a few years ago when we were in the West Final and stuff, and kind of a player or two away from getting there. But really confident in what they're doing and kind of the foundation they're laying right now. And the standard they're kind of setting for us. So we're not to camp or anything like that yet. It's easy to talk when you're not winning or losing games, but I'm really excited for what's ahead.
Brett, we mentioned that at the start of the year, of course, everybody's optimistic, everybody's undefeated. Anybody can win the Grey Cup, and I assume that's with the players as well, too. You go in with tons of optimism on what this year could be for y'all, and hopefully you're there in the last game hoisting the Grey Cup over your head. But maybe talk a little bit about some of the changes and some of the new players that are coming in. Of course, you still have to wait till camp rolls around. You get to know everybody, the new faces. There are a lot of returning faces, but whenever there's some new players into a locker room, it can go one of two ways. Of course, you hope that it's going to go well in gel, but maybe just talk about some of these new guys and what they bring and how you see this all working. Because when you look at your lineup, you look at your roster, I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic as well. And that's just not me trying to be optimistic. There really is. When you look at those names and you think about what could happen, it makes you excited about the upcoming season if you're a Rider fan.
Yeah, so I think the best thing about sports is at the end of the day, you have to play the game, right? So on paper, things, they look really good, and we have to still go out and do the job as well. But right now, it's better to look good on paper than not look good on paper. Obviously, really excited to get some of the guys in town that we picked up in free agency. I got to meet AJ there. He was in town a couple times, and he's a great guy. Can't say enough good things about him. I mean, Yoshi Hardwick coming back over. I mean, he's a guy that me and him were in the PR host together here in 2015 in the old stadium. So good buddy of mine there. And not only is it great having one of the best offensive linemen in the league coming over, but even better when it's against your rival as well. So looking forward for when he's back in town. Obviously, every one of the other guys was either an all-star at their position or coming from a team where they have a big year last year. And I think this is just really setting the tone for each and every free agency coming up, what Mace is able to do, what he's able to kind of bring in here. I know the guys are really excited for, you know, the global draft, the CFL draft coming up, and it's just another year of trying to build the right way, do the right things, and obviously at the end of the day, we want to try to win some Grey Cups and some rings out here. And I mean, like I said before, that's the reason why I wanted to sign a 3-year deal. I think the next few years here are going to be really exciting and some good times with us. You know, get the fans back in the building, get some support behind the team again, and start to win some football games.
I like your optimism, Brett. I think it's going to be a great year as well, too. I mean, we might as well take that optimistic look for sure right now before it even started, because you know what? Fingers crossed. It is your quarterback, Trevor Harris, is back. I heard in one of his recent interviews that he almost considers himself one of the new players added to the roster because of last year, unfortunately, him getting hurt about 5 games in. Just your thoughts on your quarterback coming back, being healthy, and the leader that he is, and the I'm sure the positive vibes that he brings around the locker room and to the offense leading them.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor's a guy that you've always heard good things about. I wish I crossed paths with him earlier in my career. Similar to everyone else I'm talking about, I can't say enough good things about Trevor, his family, what he brings into the dressing room, kind of the tone he sets with his work ethic, what he does on and off the field. He's a true pro. And, you know, at the end of the day, last year we were 3-1 until he went down. So obviously that changed a lot about the season. I don't think we were nearly as bad as our record showed, but in pro sports, when, you know, the ball's kind of rolling one way really good or one way really bad, sometimes it's hard to stop. And without him, I think it showed on the field how much we were kind of lacking a little bit of leadership on and off the field in the room. And he's a pro, like a true pro. There's from in the gym to in the meeting rooms to, you know, being accountable and just a leader. He's top notch with anyone in this league. And obviously having him healthy, he's going to be the one that's really taking us where we want to go and setting the example for all of us and the young guys. And we're just kind of there to follow suit, reinforce things, and try to do the best job we can. So hoping not only for him, but for everyone, obviously a healthy season. That's like kind of the number one thing we we need to get through with a little bit of difficulties with some injuries the past couple of years, but that's sports, that's football. So we just got to go out there and, like I said, start getting some wins, especially early on in the year. They're what makes a difference later in the season. And it'd be really nice to get back to where we were a couple of years ago. We had that first round bye, and you're one home away, one home win away from kind of getting to a Grey Cup.
Now, everyone knows, Brett, that you're from Nova Scotia. And a few years back, you declared that you were the best hockey player on the Rough Riders. Now you're declaring, what I've seen lately, you're the best hockey player in the entire CFL. Now, the only question I'd ask you, Brett, would Chris Getzlaf agree with you?
I think you'll have to ask Chris. you know, Chris is a two-time... two-time smack talker, but a two-time loser of the Winter Classic Hockey. So, we're undefeated against him right now, but no, all jokes aside, obviously throwing that out there would be great to kind of, you know, the money we raise and stuff like that in the game would be pretty cool to actually play against another team someday or try to raise some money somewhere else too. But having guys like Chris, Ryan, and all the former players and current players and you know, the former university girl players and everyone come back, all the sponsors come together to raise some money in the off seasons for kids in the province, you know, it just kind of really makes your heart feel full. And just a crazy idea I had, it's kind of taken off a little bit right now, but definitely couldn't do any of that without all the hard work from the people upstairs in the organization and everyone behind the scenes. So something like that's it's truly amazing, but it just shows you you know, what the fan support and how much people care in this province, kind of getting behind community kind of activities like that. And whatever you want to do in this province is definitely possible. And just super thankful to be, you know, able to put on green every day, go in there, try to work my butt off and kick the ball where it's supposed to go to try to win games in this province. And it's all really just because of the fans and the support we have in this province.
Now, you had Ryan Getzlaf playing. Did you sort of show Ryan who's boss a few weeks ago when you're playing up in Saskatoon?
I was pretty lucky. I think Ryan probably tried 1% of his normal skill level. So I think at the end of the game there, we were up by like 2 or 3 goals, and Ryan, his line went out for a shift and tied it up pretty quick. So, yeah, I don't think I'm on the level of a Stanley Cup gold medal winning NHL player, especially a captain, what he's done in his career, but also was pretty awesome for someone like that to come up and play in the game with what he's done in his career and, you know, make time for something like this. And a guy from this province, he's a guy I watched play hockey growing up, and for me it was definitely a little bit surreal to be sharing the ice with him.
Thanks for joining us on Sports Cage, Brett. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Brett.
The all-new Sports Cage NASCAR report, Rubbin' Is Racin', is brought to you by Croft Electric. Keep the lights on in any weather with a Generac standby generator from Croft Electric. Financing available. CroftElectric.com.
Well, this past Sunday in NASCAR, there were some real Texas fireworks. Chase Elliott snapped a 42-race winless streak. Ross Chastain spun out. Caution flag was thrown, ending the race and declaring Elliott the victor at the famous Texas Motor Speedway. In the manufacturer leaderboard, Chevrolet is number one with 6 wins and 338 points. Toyota 16 points back with 3 wins. Well, Ford's in a bit of a struggle, 41 back. I don't think they've won, so they've got a ways to go. Kyle Larson is still the top driver in NASCAR. This upcoming Sunday, the Geico 500 will be run at the famous Talladega Super Speedway. Man, I'd like to go to Talladega anytime. I will be back in a few minutes, but first, we're going to just have a quick comment on curling, if I could. Do I have time for a curling rant? Yes, I do. Okay, here goes my curling rant. You know, I can remember growing up in Regina, there were 6 curling rinks, the Caledonian and Regina Club, on the exhibition grounds, long before that area was called what it is now, Evraz Place. Right across the street to the west was the Wheatland. There was the Tartan on Broadway Avenue, the Highland on North Broad, and the Wascana Winter Club right beside the Albert Street Bridge. As a kid, I thought, wow, That's pretty cool, that Wascana Winter Club, but only rich kids went there. Oh, well, that's the way it goes. Four rinks now are long gone from this city's landscape. Today we have the shortened name version of the Caledonian called the Cali out by the airport. We still have the Highland out on Broad North, but I'm told fees will likely increase this upcoming season in order for the club to stay afloat. You know, it's a sad decline because curling is a lot of fun. It's a great pastime for both young and old. Nowadays, many young people barely know what curling is. I'm looking at Alan over here on the board. He's wondering what curling is. Well, I did curl, but he got injured. Anyway, unfortunately, the game itself and the challenges it presents, all the camaraderie, the social connections that come along with the sport, they're fading to black very, very slowly. So many other healthy activities are in decline as well because of, I'm looking at a young man like Alan, screens. Big screens in the family room, medium screens on tablets, and smaller screens on your mobile phones. Simply put, screens are, they're sort of screwing up a whole pile of things right now. And I'm going to go up to Derek now. And Derek, how are you enjoying yourself on the Sports Cage so far?
So far, Don, it's great. You know what? My first hour in the books, and being alongside a veteran like you so far, this is the best indoctrination into Sports Cage and introduction into the program. I'm loving it. I'm enjoying it. And I'm looking forward to the next 2 hours. Hopefully all of our listeners can stick around for the next two as well.
Well, I'd have to argue that because in listening to you about your resume, you've got more sports experience packed in there than I do. I did my research on you, Derek, when you were playing for the Saskatoon Hilltops, and I found out you were a tough cookie. You hit hard.
Well, I don't know about that. I think maybe you're just trying to make me feel good in our first show together. I enjoyed my time with the Saskatoon Hilltops. Back then, of course, we faced the Regina Rams. The Regina Rams were the junior football team because, of course, the U of R Rams were not a thing. There was just the junior football team that was the Rams, and U of R didn't have a football team. But I enjoyed our rivalry against the Rams. I enjoyed my time playing there, and Tom Sargent, the coach with the Saskatoon Hilltops, is making me feel young. I don't want him to retire because he was a coach when I was there.
Wow.
And so that's making me feel young that he's still the head coach of the Saskatoon Hilltops, of course, winning another championship this year. But two great programs in the province, of course, in Regina and in Saskatoon, and another feather in the cap for Saskatchewan football, for sure, both of those programs. Very proud of our football here in Saskatchewan, and they are two programs that also make us feel very proud.
Okay, Derek, hang in there. You'll be back with us after the news. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
If it's happening in sports in Saskatchewan, we've got it covered. The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. On your radio at 620 CKRM and online at sportscage.com.
And this is Don Hewitt back with Sports Cage along with Derek Bidwell. Derek, a former Saskatoon Hilltop and longtime sportscaster.
The all-new Sports Cage is brought to you by Nick's Service in Emerald Park, your local Massey Ferguson, Challenger, Rogator, Gleaner, and Fendt dealer. Call 781-1077.
Well, we've got Arash Madani on the line, and I know there's nobody happier than Arash when the Blue Jays beat the Yankees like they did last night. So we're going to give the Blue Jays the Sports Cage clutch performance.
The all-new Sports Cage and Coast to Coast with Arash Madani is brought to you by Smart Investing Solutions. Be smart with your money. Call Brian Golly at Smart Investing Solutions, 546-2533.
And Arash Madani of Sportsnet now joins us on the cage. It's Don Hewitt here, Arash, along with Derek Bidwell in Saskatoon. Now, the Paris Summer Olympics will be held from Friday, July 26th to Sunday, August 11th. 10,500 athletes from around the world will participate. 329 events in 32 sports. Paris will join London as the only cities to host three Olympic Games. Paris, they first hosted the Olympic Games, if you can believe it, in 1900. Oh, wow. Anyway, earlier today, Arash, you were at the Canadian Olympic Committee launch event in Toronto for the upcoming Paris Olympics. What was the launch like and what did you learn?
Well, 100 days away, and it's wild, guys, to think about this, that the last time there was a quote-unquote normal Olympics was 2018 in Pyeongchang. Because remember, 2020 got canceled with COVID. They did a modified, small, no-spectator event in 21. And then Beijing had the winter in 22. So a lot of these athletes who are going have actually never experienced, this is the Summer Olympics coming up, unless you were competing in Rio in 2016, you have no idea what an actual Olympic experience is going to be. And right. So it was interesting just seeing some of them today, spending time with one another, almost kind of sharing war stories and talking shop and just trying to get a feel and a sense for what they're about to get themselves into.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them have no idea what the magnitude of this thing is, yeah. Whether the whole post dynamic, Don, that you just brought up.
Well, you know more about Olympic athletes than I do. Give us a name of a star in the making, an Olympic star in the making who isn't quite a household a name yet.
Well, let me ask you to this, as two sports fans. Are you familiar with the name Summer McIntosh?
Yes. Swimmer.
17 years young. She's already won three world championships for Canada, which no one has ever done before. This is going to be her first Olympics, and she is already rivaling the great American swimmer, Katie Ledecky, when it comes to world records and the rest. I think if you remember Rio 2016, you remember Penny Oleksiak kind of exploding onto the scene.
Oh, totally.
Summer's going to be bigger.
Wow.
Because Penny won one gold. And my hot take of the day, fellas, is that McIntosh is going to win multiple golds and multiple extra medals there, too. So read up on your Summer McIntosh, because she is going to be in the Canadian sports psyche coming up throughout this summer.
All right, Arash. I trust you. I'm going to be watching for that one. How you doing, pal? Long time no talk. I don't think that we've actually seen each other in person or talked since a while back. I think you were in Saskatoon. We were in Calgary, and it was you and myself and Jermaine Franklin and some other people from
TSN. Very nice.
Yeah. Some good times had by all. Good. How are you doing? So I know that you mentioned a female athlete, and this seems to be the time right now when we are really not so much focusing, but women athletes are so much in the sports news right now, which is a great thing. And I truly mean that. I'm not just trying to get some bonus points for my mom and my sisters that are listening, but we're talking about Caitlin Clark with, obviously with college basketball and now her in the WNBA. And we're going to talk a little bit more about her a little later in the show. And then also we're talking about, professional women's hockey league and where they are right now and the success they had this year. But I've heard that women are really going to be a focus, not just maybe for Canada, but maybe for the next Olympics as well, too, that they are going to garner maybe even more attention than they have in the past, which I think is a great thing. It's just more great stories.
Yeah, and it's really interesting through the Olympic lens of that, is that the athletes come and go so quickly. Like, just as you kind of get to know one or two of these athletes, they disappear. You know, you talk about Caitlin Clark. For the last 2 years, she has been in every basketball conversation that exists out there. You know, she's hitting jumpers from the logo, ho-hum, ho-casual. I'm basically, I'm a combination of Steph Curry's range, Kobe Bryant's want-to, and Michael Jordan's killer, and just happens to have a ponytail. here's the difference now. Because the professional leagues are more, well, they're just more out there now and more franchises out there in the WNBA, and they're about to grow. Toronto reportedly is going to be getting an expansion franchise in the next couple of years. Athletes, yeah, Olympians are going to still come and go. And, you know, Maggie McNeil, who won a gold at Tokyo, she said, this is my last one because I'll be 25 years old and I want to move on with my life and I have other interests. But for those who want to continue to play, there are more opportunities and avenues and venues in North America to do it. You know, next summer, Project 8, a new Canadian Women's Professional Soccer League, is going to launch. It's going to be at the same time as the NWSL season, the National Women's Soccer League. So perhaps Christine Sinclair, who needed to go to the States to play, can actually play at home. The next Christine Sinclair, Jesse Fleming, who's going to be the captain. So I think what you're going to end up finding is there are going to be a lot more athletes, female athletes, that we're going to be able to follow and watch and see and just kind of have on our psyche because, shoot, 5 years ago, none of this really existed. And now it's all happening all at once.
Yeah, I agree, Arash. I mean, like I said, with those names that you mentioned and the names I did as well, too, it just seems like we're just talking about women in sports more, which is great, as I said, which is more great stories. There's so many next Christine Sinclairs, like you said, that are out there that are going to make for such great stories and are really going to be something for us to focus on in the future. More sport, more stories for sports guys like us. We'll take it all. Speaking about the Olympics, so what have you heard about the venue? We've heard about some, you know, whether we talk about Winter Olympics or Summer Olympics, there's been some cities that have done great jobs, and the cities have really prospered from having the Olympics, and others that, you know, did not. What are you hearing so far about this venue and how things are coming along and how it's looking for Paris?
Well, I mean, here's the one thing now that Olympics need to do is you need to go into cities that can repurpose a lot of existing venues, and not just sporting venues, which we'll get into in a minute, to make them basically playable for Olympic Games. What do I mean by that? Well, for instance, tennis is a Summer Olympic sport. Well, Paris has Roland Garros, the home of the French Open. So they're going to play the tennis there. There's no need to build a brand new facility. We're in Paris-Bercy, downtown, where they host EuroLeague basketball. That's going to be the home of the medal rounds for basketball. But the first week, badminton is going to be there. Here's where this is the other reason, because you cannot allow, like some cities have and some countries have, an Olympics to basically take over your city, hold them hostage, and leave them bankrupt, like they did in Rio in 2016. I guess they could have in Sochi, but in 2014, but Putin just spent $53 billion and didn't care. But you can take convention centers and big convention centers and put temporary seating in for events like taekwondo, for karate, for table tennis, for some of those sports. Even for weightlifting, you don't need big venues. And when you look at legacies of Olympics, look at what Vancouver's done. They have a better highway on the way to Cypress Mountain and to Whistler. They have an extra train line. And they have a brand new convention center downtown along the waterfront where the media and broadcast centers were 14 years ago. That's the kind of stuff that you want to add on to. Toronto hosted the Pan Am Games in 2015. The only new infrastructure they built was a brand new pool that continues to be a community center today. They just hosted the Canadian Championships over the weekend, and the Olympic trials are going to be here. So you need to find what existing and I don't even have to talk about soccer stadiums or rugby stadiums in France. We all know how many of those there are. You need to find existing infrastructure, update it if it needs to, modify it if you can, and then make sure you're using whatever you have within your parameters to keep the costs as reasonable as possible, because the last thing you need are debts of billions of dollars just by hosting an Olympics.
Oh, outstanding thoughts there, Arash. Now, coming out of the break, I want to ask you about the Canadian basketball teams going to Paris. So if you could hang on there, Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
The all-new Sports Cage is brought to you by Bronco Plumbing and Heating, where professional service is guaranteed. They'll treat you right. 781-2090. The all-new Sports Cage. Text 306-936-6262. 620 CKRM.
And Don Hewitt back in the cage, along with Derek Bidwell and Arash Madani. Now, Arash, I am absolutely chomping at the bit to watch both our basketball teams play in Paris. How about you?
Oh, absolutely. And, guys, I'm a little biased because last summer I had the opportunity, the privilege, to go to Asia and cover the Men's World Cup, where Canada qualified for the Olympics for the first time since Sydney 2000. And it's not that we have a good team. It's not that we have a contending team. Like, this is where we have to stop being Canadian for a minute.
Yeah.
Don, Derek?
Yep. Yeah, we're always
we have to beat our chest and say we're damn good and we're gonna contend for a medal. And it's okay to do that because that's how much talent there is on the roster. And these guys are very un-Canadian when it comes to going up against the competition, too, because I remember Dylan Brooks telling me, hey, this is no joke, and we're no joke. We're here to win, and we're here to win gold.
Right on.
So it's there. Now, the women are an interesting one because they had to back in to qualify, and they're in actually a group where they can come out. The problem with the women's national team is, for the last couple of Olympics, they've underachieved. So they have a few WNBA players. They have a few European players who play in the European League. They should be able to be in the mix, too. So I know in Tokyo, the women's soccer team kind of captured the imagination of Canadians. I think the basketball team is about to do that this summer in Paris.
We talked a little bit. I just got one more thing to add here about basketball, and we're going to switch to the NHL and ask you a few questions about that, Arash. But with the basketball team, Zach Edey, a lot of people, you know, we're talking about Zach Edey, of course, with the Purdue Boilermakers being there in the end, and the big man for the Boilermakers right down the middle there, seemingly to get better and better and better offensively, and turn into a bit of a leader, it seemed like, as well. But the big man, 7'4". Would he be a part of Canada?
So here's the amazing thing. If we go back 20, 30 years, the idea of somebody being the two-time National Player of the Year in college of the Canadian would be far-fetched. You know, nobody would believe that would happen.
Yep.
And of course he'd be on the national team. Guess what, guys? Jordy Fernandez, the head coach, is going to cut 10 to 12 NBA players this summer from the original training camp they're going to have.
It's nuts.
Right? Like, if you put somebody in a coma in 1995 and woke them up today and told them that, they'd be like, hold on, like, was there a zombie apocalypse while I was asleep? That's how far we have come. Like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of Hamilton, who plays for Oklahoma City, this is not hyperbole, this is not exaggeration, will finish top three in the NBA MVP voting.
Yep.
With Jokic and Luka and
I think he'll win it, by the way. I think he'll win it.
And LeBron. SGA is right there. So that's what we're talking about at the level of play and the depth that we have on our national team roster when it comes to men's basketball.
And the other great thing about it, too, Arash, is that I think that these players, you know, maybe before, if you were just there was one player, or you were one of those one or two players that was in the NBA, and you know, something was coming up, whether it was the Olympics, World Championship, some type of tournament, you could represent Canada. Not that you wouldn't want to represent Canada, because any chance you get to represent Canada, you're filled with pride and you want to do that. But you might be thinking, well, we don't stand much of a chance. Well, now I think people are these players that you talk about. you know, possible MVPs and the AP Player of the Year 2 years in a row in Zach Edey at 7'4", 21 years old. I mean, I think
how about Jamal Murray last year being the second best player in the entire NBA playoffs after his teammate Nikola Jokic?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you, there's a long list now, and I think I'm not going to say it's the dream team of the United States from many years back in the 90s, but I think these players look at the roster as well with these other names and think, wow, I could be a part of something really special wearing a Team Canada basketball jersey.
So for the first time ever, Canada medaled at a Basketball World Cup. That was last summer. They punched their ticket into the Olympics. And, you know, SGA and RJ Barrett, who was a top three pick in the NBA draft, and Kelly Olynyk, who's a 10-year vet, and all these guys. But I'm talking to Dylan Brooks, doing an interview, and there's Dylan, who has played his absolute butt off for 2.5 weeks. And he's just had, you know, 27 points and 15 rebounds, something like that, to get them onto the podium. And he's standing there. We're doing the interview. He is looking at his GM, who is RJ Barrett's father, Owen Barrett, who played with Steve Nash the last time Canada got to the Olympics in Sydney. And the medal's around his neck. And I said, Dylan, this summer was the start. What's your message to the guys who weren't here? Because there were a bunch who couldn't contractually, injuries, Murray coming off the championship run. And he looked right at me and then right at the camera and he said, we want to win gold next summer. Let's go. So the attitude and the mindset and the belief has changed too. That we're not just here to show up and compete. We're here to win. And that's happening in a lot of Canadian sports right now, which is super cool when it comes to the Olympic side of things.
Oh, that is. Now, Raj, thanks a lot for your insight. Some great questions by yourself, Derek Bidwell. We were going to talk about hockey. We've run out of time. But, of course, Raj, the Coyotes playing their last game. Can you give us 20 seconds on the Coyotes playing their last game tonight?
I can't remember, Don and Derek, a franchise in professional sports that's been a bigger failure start to finish and every step in between. Ownership, on ice, venue, city, name, than the Arizona Phoenix Coyotes. Good riddance.
Yep. You know what? That's fair. That's right. Absolutely, that's fair.
Well, thanks, Arash. Sports Cage will continue in just a moment.
Back to the all-new Sports Cage. Text 306-936-6262. 620-CKRM.
And it's Don Hewitt back with Sports Cage. And up next will be Glenn Suter. And Glenn Suter, of course, will be with his usual segment that we love, of course, Press Coverage, it's called. And it's very suitable that we call Glenn Suter's segment Press Coverage because I think I saw every single football game that Glenn ever played for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Many a time he was in press coverage, and I can tell you that I think he won out every single time. Glenn Suter was outstanding in press coverage. How did you do in press coverage there, Derek?
I don't recall. I seem to think that I would have liked being in press coverage. I wouldn't have been as successful or have been anywhere near or close to being the player that Glenn Suter was. But I did like man-to-man more than I did any type of zone type of defense. And there's a big reason for that is because a lot of times I get confused about where I'm supposed to go. Whereas if it was just, you know, if you're out on the corner, you know you're taking the wide receiver, it's one-on-one, you're going man-on-man. But when it goes into zone and you're going into a cover two, cover three, you're doing some type of hybrid of both, then I would always ask the halfback, who is a buddy of mine, I'll throw his name out there, a little mention, a shout-out to Kelly Wist, and I would ask Kelly Wistie, who I got and what I do all the time, because he kind of knew what everybody was supposed to do.
That's what Glenn did.
Yeah, he was that captain of the defense and knew what everybody was supposed to do. So I would always ask him. And sometimes I wouldn't even have to ask him. They would make the call in the huddle, and then he would tell me right away. He would tell me what I'm doing because he knew that I didn't really know. So I prefer man-to-man. Less confusing for me.
Right. I can't tell you how many times I saw Glenn in his safety position with Saskatchewan at the last second explaining to players what to do. I think he talked to Albert Brown for about 40 seconds before every snap.
Yeah.
Did you not, Glenn? I'm not knocking Albert Brown, but you were helping these people.
Well, Albert could run like the wind. I mean, like he could make up for any mistakes with just sheer speed. I mean, he was a great punt returner for us as well. But you're right, Don. There were many times that I would explain to Albert. I would say, "Okay, Albert, you have number 85. Yeah. Wherever number 85 goes,
you shouldn't laugh.
You go
so long.
With it." Yeah, but hey, and I'll tell Derek too that, you know what, at the pro level, that happens almost every snap, where somebody will turn to the safety or the middle linebacker, or often there's a D lineman that also knows the defenses too. Bobby was great at that. But, you know, there'll be those guys that sort of learn everybody's responsibility, and that's certainly the job of the safety for sure when it comes to the secondary. So, you know, it was incumbent upon me to be able to answer any question in a split second before the snap of the ball. And they often happen, even at the pro level. Guys, you know, they get caught in the emotion of the game. They're getting physical with their receiver. They're into that mindset. And you say something you've ran 15, 20 times already in the game, and they go, What do I got? And you turn around and say, "You got the deep third. Okay, good, okay." You know, they get straightened out.
So what you're saying, Glenn, is that I could have played pro football.
Yeah. Exactly, Derek, exactly.
All right.
But, yeah, no, I didn't get much press, so I heard you guys talking about press, and I didn't get a lot of it. I know that, you know, the safety spot, it's a little harder to get into those matchups unless you're playing really low. And, you know, it's more of picking up man-to-man if we blitz a halfback and play zero and that kind of thing. But I did like the zone looks better because it's kind of like being a defenseman in hockey, I think. You can see the play developing, and you see, you know, route combinations. If there's a post coming or if there's an over route at about 15 yards, you know there's a post that's going to be behind you. You know there's probably going to be a seam to the wide side of the field. And once you do all the film work with all that, then they sort of happen just before the quarterback throws the football. You realize exactly what's happening and where to be and where to break. And that extra second, that split second, is how you get your hands on the ball from the safety spot.
Just wait 1 minute, gentlemen. I've just got to pay one bill.
The all-new sports page with CFL and Saskatchewan Rough Rider legend Glenn Suter is brought to you by Quality Tire. With 9 locations across Saskatchewan, visit qualitytire.ca.
And everybody's getting bonus coverage of Glenn's segment, as we'll give it to you before and after the intro. Anyway, something different. So, one thing about you, Glenn, at safety, you had to definitely know the coverages. You're a football guy and a broadcaster. Now, do you ever watch other color analysts in the United States to check out what they are doing on broadcasts and take notes on any sort of thing like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I watch the NFL often, and you know, I like all forms of football. So, and I've said that many times on the show that, you know, whether it's college, Canadian college, you know, U.S. college or the NFL, I'm watching quite often, and I don't necessarily watch the whole game and I don't necessarily have favorite teams, but I watch to study. I watch to study the way they present the game, how they run their replays, you know, exactly what,
what Tony Romo or one of the analysts are saying and how they say it. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're describing a 15-yard curl mm-hmm. and why the player got open and why the play was successful, you know, there's only so many ways you can do that. And it's the same on both sides of the border. So you can break it into looking at the big picture. Sorry about that. That was my dog with the phone back there.
But
you can
radio.
Look at it with the big picture, which is strategy, time in the game, what's going on in the big picture. You can look at it as a coach's decision. You can look and approach the analysis as the player profile, you know, that corner who makes the play or that receiver who makes the play. Maybe on this replay, we're going to go right to describing a little bit about his background so that people can be invested in the players more. And then there's just the straight X's and O's of it as to why a play is successful or not. So, you know, because of those elements, I watch NFL football and I lock into how the analysts are breaking it down. I often make notes as it's going on. It's really a study session for me to, you know, to look at it and be flat honest, steal it. If it's good. And I
right.
think that's a great way to describe, you know, two DBs switching responsibilities. I'm going to steal it. So, yeah, mm-hmm. so I watch for that reason, guys. Like I sometimes I'll be watching, you know, an hour and a half of an NFL game, and I won't even know what the score is.
Right. That's interesting. Now, who do you think is the best the color man in the United States? And then I'll piggyback back that to this question. They've got so many technical toys down in the U.S. TSN's got lots of technical toys. How often do you... sorry, I'm asking you two questions at once. Anyway, how often do you talk to the producers at TSN about the technical toys that can be used in a football broadcast? And how much do you talk to them about, okay, let's try to innovate?
Yeah, we have those meetings often, you know, certainly in the off season. And throughout the season, they happen a little bit less, but they still do happen. And, you know, for the most part, for the road producers and for guys like me that are on the air, we are making suggestions. We're seeing things or thinking of different ways to, you know, statistically show a guy's career or his season or his game. We're trying to look at different graphics, different ways to juice it up a little bit and get people talking about something that maybe is just something new and innovative. So, you know, we're constantly doing that. But you're right, Don. I mean, the reality is, and this is not an excuse, because I'm real proud of our coverage, honestly. And I'm really hard on what I do. I was as a player as well. And I'm really hard on what we do as a group when I watch games back. And I watch all our games back. To look at, do I have, you know, crutch words? Do I have words that I keep falling back on? Am I describing the same thing over and over again in the same way? I don't want to do that. So I look back to catch those, but I also am critical of how we're doing it. Is it smooth? Does it give them an insight and understanding of why a play was successful or why it wasn't? And so when I watch the NFL, I'm real proud of our coverage, because you're right. We have a very different budget, and I'm you know, it's not an excuse, because we have everything we need to present the game in a very, very good way. But, you know, for instance, you know, those fonts you see on the screen, like where you'll see a receiver, it maybe it has his picture at the side of the screen. You see him live on the other half of the screen. Mm-hmm. And then underneath he has a note, like a hero note, we call him, that is sort of, you know, 150 yards receiving in the last game versus BC. You know, that we do that all within our broadcast in our one truck that is at each facility for the game. The NFL may have two or three of those trucks. So they'll have one of those massive van trucks. Like, I'm talking the big 15-wheeler, whatever they are, 18-wheelers.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have an extra truck just for those graphics. So they'll separate those graphics. So some of those fancy telestrators that we can do too, but we can't do them live because we can't turn it around fast enough with everything else that's going on just to keep with the game, especially our game up here. That's the other thing that they have a huge advantage, their color guys. They have a huge advantage with time between plays. I mean,
oh yeah.
We don't have time to tell you about the player, do a telestrator showing the X's and O's of the play, and then cut to the coach and talk about how he loves to play press coverage when these situations. We don't have time to do any of that. We can pick one, and then we better be on point to get it, the point out, or we'll go right into a play, and that is a faux pas in television to miss a play, to miss a snap.
Absolutely, to be, you know, talking over something like that, for sure. And you know what? Suits, you do a great job not doing that. Now your colleagues, some former players in the CFL, were talking about Dwayne Ford, Matt Dunnigan, Milt Stegall, even Bo Levi Mitchell, who's hoping to join you in the broadcast booth by the sounds of it when he's done his playing career, but he's not done there yet. You know, these are players that, you know, picked it up like yourself and are doing a great job broadcasting. Now, you talked about the NFL and maybe looking at some things that they do and maybe stealing something that they do. Troy Aikman's been around for a long time, a great broadcaster. You mentioned Tony Romo, of course, who a lot of people think maybe spends a little too much time trying to predict what the next play will be, but we'll leave that alone. He's a great broadcaster. Greg Olsen's done a great job, former tight end, of course, with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
But Tom Brady, of course, end up with Tom. Tom Brady is coming in this year as a broadcaster after taking last year off after finally retiring in his second retirement from the NFL, but he didn't play last year. This year he said he's going to get into the broadcast booth and get in there for his first year of a 10-year, $375 million contract with Fox Sports. So $37.5 million for the next 10 years. How do you think Tom's going to do? I mean, in the past, Tom's done everything pretty well, and he's set his mind to. Your thoughts on Tom and him joining some of those other names?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I just my eyes roll when I hear $37 million a year to do one game a week, one game a week. Man, I wouldn't know what to do with all my time. You know what? I think he'll do fine. Here's the thing. And by the way, you guys, you mentioned on our crews, like Dwayne Ford and Matt Dunnigan, who are up in the booth. You know, I think Bo could do it as well. You know, all different styles, certainly Matt and Dwayne, but and different than I do it. But I watch and study them just as much as I'd watch and study, you know, Troy Aikman or Romo or any of those guys. So, you know, again, it's just finding different nuance to describe a play differently that I find interesting, and then maybe I can, you know, steal it, make it a little bit of my own, and then go from there. But to answer your question on Brady, it's really simple to me. It's not easy to execute, but it's a pretty simple formula. If Tom Brady goes into this job thinking that because he was a star quarterback, maybe one of the best ever, that he will be really good as a color analyst. If he goes in with that attitude, he won't be very good. And I agree with you on Tony Romo, and I don't mind saying that. I think the prediction of plays is the wrong way to go, and it also stomps on your play-by-play guy, which is important because his call will be part of the history of that game. And if it's a big game, it'll be part of the history of the league forever and ever. And if you're, you know, interrupting him to predict a curl route or something, it's just not worth it. So I think he's pulled back from that a lot, but he does some really good things as well. So, again, to talk about Tom Brady, if he goes in and understands that he's going into a new job, it's different. It's not just knowing football and going and talking about football. You have to be listening in your right ear. Well, for me, it's my right ear. To the producer on every play. In your left ear, you have to be listening to the play-by-play guy so that you sound like you're together in the booth. And then you have to keep your mind straight and be ready to tell a straight and be ready to explain a play in a very short amount of time with a top and a bottom. And it takes time to understand it. It takes time to learn it. And if he goes in learning a new position with great enthusiasm and learning a new job and says, I'm a rookie, teach me and let's go and let me figure this out, then he'll be just fine. He'll be great. But if he goes in thinking, hey, I know football, I'll just show up and I can talk about this game. You have to know every single player, you know, every player and their backgrounds. And you have to have that ready and available. Because if you're not, it's not about you anymore in the booth. And that's another sort of hurdle that I think a lot of guys have to overcome is your career as a player is now over. And now your job is to enhance the careers of players on the field and coaches and strategies and the game itself. That's your job. It's you can bring up the past a little bit, but if Tom Brady goes and talks about the good old days all the time on the air, that'll go bad quickly. And that $37 million, they'll start scratching their head going, what are we paying this guy? But, my gut feeling is he will, you know, take it on as a learning experience and he'll go and be great at it. And I one of the best all time. So I hope he's good. I hope he's really good.
I hope he's really good too, Suits. Yeah, and the other thing too about Brady though, like for example, let's say that I wanted to have a job like that. Well, either I have it, I have the chops, or I don't. They're not going to wait for me to pick it up or anything like that. With Tom, of course, probably right now he's going through broadcasting college, a crash course of broadcasting college, and they're going to give him every resource that they can, of course, to be there and be polished when he wants to get it started at this upcoming season. Now, one thing you mentioned about Tom, hopefully he just doesn't talk about the good old days and all of that. But one thing I think would be good about Tom and would be a little bit of a balance, like maybe throwing in an odd story or a reflection of something from his playing days, but also learning a little bit from maybe somebody like Tony Romo and not over predicting the next play, like you said, but having a bit of a balance there, right? I think Tom could probably be a guy that would be a little bit like that, don't you think? If you're trying to predict what Tom's going to be like when he does debut?
Yeah, oh, for sure. And, you do want to put in the odd story of, to bring perspective on what you're seeing and what the fan is seeing on the field. It's important to bring in your personal experience that leads you to make this evaluation of what's happening on the field. Those stories of your past and, situations that you've been in, like how does it feel to go to a Super Bowl? That is important that we hear Tom Brady tell us how he felt when he went.
And he would have a lot of experiences to reflect on. Being there
right,
so many
exactly,
times.
Exactly, exactly. And that gives us that perspective that here's a guy who was the best of all time, and let's say there's a rookie quarterback starting in this current Super Bowl, and we're trying to figure out how his emotions are going, how he feels going into this game, and Brady says, here's how I felt in my first, and here's how I felt in my last. That gives us great perspective on this guy. So, I think there is a balance to be had, and I'm not sure how they do it. I will say this, though, Derek, that the tutoring and the going to school to get ready to perform doesn't really happen. Honestly, it doesn't. It's sort of like we've heard you in interviews. For me, it was radio. The TSN had heard me do radio, not color for radio, but they'd heard me just be on the air. So they had that to kind of lean on as far as could I do it or could I not do it. But as far as training and things like that, it's really non-existent. Now, it might be more so in the States where, they have so much more money just to throw around and maybe they send someone over to go over film and stuff with Brady. But You know, Tom's going to have to figure it out on his own, and he's going to have to do it in time, and he's going to have to do it in coordination with what the pitchers are showing, because they're all those cameras they have, the director's cutting to each different camera, sometimes from what you say he'll cut, and sometimes he'll cut before you say it, and it's your job to make the transition in mid-sentence. So, you know, he's got to figure all that out. I'm sure he'll be fine. He did pretty well communicating what needed to be done to the 11 guys on the field. Well, 10, if you count him.
Yeah. So what you're saying, Glenn, is it basically it's your love of doing it and your own self-discipline that is the main factor in success?
Yeah, I think, first of all, that it's a great point, Don, that you say about the love of doing it and the love of the game and the love of football. Honestly, when people, and this, it's such a subjective world we live in, but when people do like my style or what I do, they'll often ask me, you know, how much work do you do? Why are you the way you are? And I'll say, because I love this game. And I think the medium that we work in television, and you know this from working in TV, it will expose you if you're faking it immediately. Mm-hmm. You cannot fake it on television, or probably radio too, but you certainly can't fake it on television, especially when you're on camera. So you better either love it or be Meryl Streep and figure out how to act like you love it, because you will be exposed immediately if you're not. So I think that's a huge part of it. And you know, you say, well, every player loves the game if they played at the pro level. Yeah, not always. Sometimes you're just thinking about the money. Sometimes the motivation is different. You played because you were great and you could play, but you didn't really enjoy it. And you're going in there and you're going to make a ton of money, but you're going to sort of fake your way through television. Well, if you do that, you'll be exposed immediately.
Suits, we're going to talk about training camp here now. We had Brett on before. Brett Lawther, of course, the place kicker for the Riders. Mm-hmm. And we were talking a little bit about training camp. Now that seems that we're just blasting through this year. Now halfway through April, May, of course, training camps open up in the Canadian Football League. I'd feel amiss not asking you about the Riders, of course, and what you're excited about, or just your thoughts on them going into this one. Of course, there's some off-season signings. Every team has them. Every team's going to have a new look, and it's some different people on their roster. But for the Riders, they'll have veteran quarterback Trevor Harris back behind center, and it seemed like last year one of the big reasons, of course, that they were struggling so much is that they just didn't have, you know, a great quarterback leading them.
Yeah, they had those young guys and Dolagala and Fine that are, you know, trying to find their way, and I think both will be very good quarterbacks. They just were so young and you know, going through the ups and downs. But yeah, this is one of the most, I think, exciting I'd say training camps for the Riders in quite a few years, honestly. There's some big stories. First of all, starting with a completely new coaching staff, basically. I can't wait to see what Coach Mueller does with the offense. You know, Corey Mace is a well-respected... I don't really like the player-coach moniker, because I think it's sort of... it indicates that it might be sort of a buddy-buddy system going on.
Yeah, like he's a softie or something.
Yeah, and it's not that. He's a respected... guy who understands what training camp is, what's necessary. He's been on a championship team. You know, he knows how to bring this locker room together. Not that the other guys didn't. I'm just saying that this is an interesting camp for a lot of reasons, because you can make all these signings in the offseason. That's great. But, and a lot of good players. But unless they are now working together with the scheme and the coaching staff, and they take ownership early in camp, in other words, they're sitting in that locker room saying, guys, do not look outside of these doors for help or for someone to save us. What happens in this season is going to happen right in this room, right with the guys that you're looking at right now. And as soon as they take that ownership and they take it onto the field, they've got veterans, they've got speed, they've got talent, they've got physicality. All of that is there. But a lot of other teams have that stuff too. So you gotta, you got to come together in camp. That will be interesting. Let's see Trevor Harris's health. That's going to be a big story early on. See where he's at as far as his movement and things like that. But I think he'll be fine. And they've done a nice job from a scouting and off-season signing perspective to bring in some great talent. So now it's a matter of that all coming together and gelling when camp begins. And that's going to be the story.
Well, thanks for your great segment today, Glenn. Really enjoyed listening to a lot of your comments about sports broadcasting and football broadcasting. Yeah, that was very interesting. Well, we have to head to news. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
Happening in sports in Saskatchewan, we've got it covered. The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. On your radio at 620 CKRM and online at sportscage.com.
And this is Don Hewitt, back with Sports Cage, along with Derek Bidwell in Saskatoon, TSN's Daniela Ponticelli joining us on Sports Cage on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. And of course, as many of you know, Daniela, in the last couple of CFL seasons, hosted the Rider game day pre- and post-game shows, and she did a great job, I might add, as well as working for the Rough Riders at that time. She has a vast broadcasting resume, and now Daniela is a TSN play-by-play voice for the Professional Women's Hockey League. We call it the PWHL. She also covers Canada's national women's hockey team, who won a gold medal Sunday in Utica, New York at the World Championships, defeating the U.S. in overtime. Daniela, what an incredible game on Sunday. The drama was gut-wrenching at times, and honestly, it was the most entertaining hockey game I've seen this season anywhere.
You could not script it better, Don, honestly. And I think what a treat, too, given that in the preliminary round when Canada and USA met, it was a goaltending battle. So if you won a defensive duel, you got that in the preliminary round. It was scoreless until overtime. The USA took that one. And then you get this offensive feast in the final. You couldn't ask for more. And the best part is they just kept trading goals, and they were beautiful goals. It wasn't out of reach at any point. And wow, talk about edge of your seat the whole time. And I just had this feeling, I wonder what will happen in overtime when it comes to things like, you know, being on the power play, right? You mm-hmm. think, okay, what a gift. It worked out well for Canada, but it can also be those moments that catch you off guard. You just never know. You're playing the USA. They could have come and even scored a shorthanded. It was so thrilling. Honestly, I think it took a few years off my life, but overall, it's exactly what you dream of when you say best in the world facing each other to be deemed world champions. And hey, the Canadians got it this year.
Oh, man. And you must have had a huge audience at TSN. I don't know if the numbers are out yet on that, but in the millions for sure. I wanted to ask you, Daniela, is there a better leader anywhere in sports than Canada's captain, Marie-Philippe Poulin? Poulin is just unbelievable. She wills. She's like Jean Beliveau when I was a kid. She wills her team to win.
So this is the best thing. I'm right now prepping for Thursday. Trying to keep my days of the week straight here. Thursday's PWHL game, because that's when the league resumes. So 4 days after everything is put to bed with the World Championships, that's double IHF, we're back with the PWHL. And that Montreal is taking on Minnesota. Toronto is facing Boston. And all that's to say is I'm going through Poulin's stats, and she is just incredible because it's not just her ability. By the way, she's Montreal's points, goals, and assists leader because of course she is. But she's also just so incredible in the faceoff circle. She's taken the most faceoffs of any PWHL player, and she has played three fewer games because she was injured coming into the World Championships.
Wow.
So she has taken 370 faceoffs, and she still has a 58% efficiency in the face of it. That's just how good she is. She's so well-rounded. I'm also revisiting some of the stats against Toronto, because those two teams are battling at Bell Center on Saturday, and it's going to be an incredible game. And to think back to their first meeting when Poulin literally put her team on her back, scored a game-tying goal with 28 seconds left. I mean, that's just what she brings. Make that 18 seconds, not 28, 18. Oh, she did it even less time. And that's just the type of player she is. So driven, so determined, and I think her team has been missing her. Montreal's on a four-game skid. They're facing a pretty strong Minnesota team. They were on a five-game streak before the break, but now they have Poulin back, and that's always the X factor. Every coach I talk to says the same thing. You can game plan as much as you want, Dawn, and then you have to remember Poulin is on Montreal's team.
Yeah.
And you have to face that.
Danielle, I'll take you back quickly to women's hockey at the national level and the national teams and the national championship, or sorry, the world championship.
Mm-hmm.
People's one criticism of it, if you would, in the past would be, of course, they just thought, well, it's going to be Canada versus the U.S. in the final. We might as well just get through all these other round-robin games and get to that game, because that's going to be an amazing game, and all these other games are going to be so lopsided, and they're just really just a matter of getting through them till we get to the big U.S.-Canada matchup. But we've seen recently that other countries are starting to come along, which is what everybody wanted them to do, to be a little bit more competitive. We're seeing Sweden, we're seeing other countries come up and play a little mm-hmm. more solid. Just your thoughts on how the other countries are coming up. Now, Canada and the U.S. are still at a different level. As the kids say, there's levels to these things, and Canada and the U.S. are at a different level. But the other countries are closing the gap, aren't they?
Yeah, to give you some perspective, I completely agree with what you're saying, Derek, right? Canada, USA, they have them and Finland. And Finland only once have been in the finals. So when you consider that, that final game is almost always earmarked for Canada, USA. Czechia would like to change that. They'd like mm-hmm. to be the fourth team to make it into a final. Because like I said, there was one time Finland was able to upset Canada in the semifinals and get into that final game, of course, earning silver in that one against the United States. But seven nations in total have medaled, so the bronze medal game is still quite competitive, and it was a great match between Finland, matchup rather, between Finland and Czechia for that bronze game, went all the way to a shootout. Of course, the gold medal game will never go to a shootout. They keep playing 20-minute 3-on-3, which thankfully we didn't need too many of those, because it was already such a thrill to watch the overtime that we did get. Absolutely, these countries are moving up. A lot of my coverage this year was of the B group, and their whole goal is to stay in the top division so they can keep developing their players, keep them in and invested. I'm telling you right now, watch Sweden, and especially watch Sweden 5-6 years from now. Mm-hmm. I'd be shocked if they weren't, you know, knocking on the door of that final. They have so much young talent. Their stars, 17 years old, 18 years old, and they're so good. They're just getting better. A bunch of them are NCAA commits for 2 years from now, right? So we're seeing the growth as we go, and I think that's the most important thing, is you do have to be patient, because as much as we want to force this international parity, it's going to take time. It comes down to investment. We're seeing that in the PWHL. I'm excited to see, apparently about 100 international players have, you know, put their name in this year's draft for the PWHL. How many more international players will come over and play pro in North America, right? And potentially bring up the standards in those other countries. So it is just a matter of time and I think patience. But you're right, right now it's still a duel of the best in the world, and the best in the world being Canada and the United States.
I agree with you, Danielle, about Sweden. And as I mentioned, I had a chance to speak with a friend of mine that's playing pro hockey over there. And he was saying that the women's game is just taken off, and just how much that these young girls are now getting into hockey, and it's just amazing how much they've closed the gap. And I think once again, down the road, that gap will close even more so, as you mentioned, Sweden, Finland, Czechia, some
and
of the other ones.
And kudos as well to the SDHL, which is the Swedish Women's Hockey League there. They're also trying, right? They're continuing to develop and create a pathway for their athletes to keep playing. Because one of the hardest things, you know, just talking to different members of these countries that are involved with their programs, the biggest thing is keeping them in the country, right? Keeping them coming back to play for their national team. So even if they do go play for North American team or league, they just still want them to come back and make sure that they're with their national team, so that that development and growth actually parlays into success at the World Championship.
Yeah, and we've seen it with the men as well, too. Of course, the men that come over and play in the NHL, how much they love and cherish. And you talk about guys like Alexander Ovechkin or something, that they would say that is one of the biggest things in their hockey career, in their heart, is to play for their country. Now, switching back to the PWHL, just your thoughts on as we go into the postseason a little bit more. You touched a little bit on some of the favorites, some of the matchups, but it has to be exciting to be a part of this and this history as we go into the PWHL playoffs.
Each team only has 5 games left in the regular season. It feels like we just began. Of course, this is a shortened season because it was the inaugural one. Next year, we'll certainly have more games. It was 24 regular season games per team, and next year there will be a minimum of 30. That's per the contract. Could be even more. We'll see how that shakes out, obviously, when the schedule comes out. But just to put in perspective, 5 games remaining each, and the top 3 teams are all jockeying. The first place team, of course, not only gets the home ice advantage for playoffs, they also get to choose whether they want to face the 3rd seed or the 4th seed in the first round. That is the coolest part of this. And there is an advantage. I keep thinking about Toronto. Say Toronto ends up staying where they are right now, first in the league, and they get to choose. I don't know if they're going to choose Ottawa, for example, who's in the 4th place, because their matchups with Ottawa have not gone their way, right? You can be really strategic in how you want to play this out, and I think that part's a really fascinating case to be made. And as I said, nothing is locked in. We still don't even know for sure who's in that 4th place spot. If Ottawa stays there, we have 3 Canadian teams in those 4 playoff positions. That's exciting times for Canadian PWHL fans. And as mentioned, of course, coming up this Saturday, the big Bell Center game, it will set a new record. Of course, that first one set at Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, February 16th, more than 19,000. But the Bell Center can hold 21,000 plus, largest indoor arena in North America. So we'll see how things shake out on Saturday.
Well, I'm cheering for Poulin in Montreal, just so you know, Daniello. I love Poulin. I just love Poulin.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love her. Go Habs. I guess they're not the Habs. Now,
but they're playing in the home of the Habs.
So right, and sold out. And the Habs aren't even selling out every game. They are selling more tickets than the Montreal Canadiens right now. I kid you not. The Canadians are not sold out. They're a few thousand short. Anyway, in terms of the PWHL, when are logos coming and when are team nicknames coming?
I can't tell you that, Don. I'm not privy to all that information. We'll see it when it happens. Of course, we do know what the name of the Championship Cup is. That was announced more than a couple weeks ago now. The Walter Cup, so that is what the teams are playing for. But all of that other stuff is to be determined. I'm personally excited to see how the schedule is going to look next year, because it will be different. The starting date will likely be different. There's a lot of discussion about more neutral site games as well. So we'll see. Of course, they're trying to see which barns they can fill, which markets, you know, are hungry for PWHL action, all of that exciting stuff.
Last one, Daniela, from me. We're talking, of course, about the amazing success of Team Canada, of course, at the Worlds, and then we're talking about PWHL. But you're a hockey fan in general. I'm sure you follow all types of hockey, so I'll finish with this one. Your thoughts going into the NHL playoffs as well. You think Canada finally ends the drought and we can finally have a Stanley Cup parade in Canada?
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Hope so.
Hey, wouldn't that be nice? I'll keep it short and sweet. I haven't had as much time to focus on the NHL this year because my attention's been a little bit pulled in another direction. But I'm excited. I always lean on my Canadian hometown, Winnipeg. That's where the first place that my family moved to when we moved to Canada. And the Jets will always kind of be a special part of that. And so I'm excited to see how they develop and how they go on this playoff run. But all in all, I'm just excited that there's so much great hockey and there's going to be some good overlap. May is going to be busy. Obviously, the PWHL champion will be crowned next month, the inaugural one, and lots of excitement ahead. I know I've said that a lot, but that's truly how I feel. I just can't believe we're in this last stretch before everything gets underway with playoffs.
Sports Cage is brought to you by Busy Bee Overhead Doors. Busy Bee will repair or replace your residential or commercial garage door so you don't get stuck in or out. I use them. They're great. Catch the buzz. Busy Bee Doors, the garage door specialist. Well, thanks a lot, Daniela. You're doing such a great job calling the action in the Professional Women's Hockey League. We love watching you at home. And congratulations on your accomplishments since you left Regina. And it sounds like you'll be traveling even more next year within your league. Sports Cage continues in just a moment.
The all-new Sports Cage is brought to you by Busy Bee Doors. Busy Bee will repair or replace your residential or commercial garage door so you don't get stuck in or out. Catch the buzz. Busy Bee Doors, the garage door specialists. Don't miss a minute of the all-new Sports Cage. Podcasts are posted at sportscage.com. 620 CKRM.
And it's Don Hewitt back with The Cage along with Derek Bidwell in Saskatoon. I have a correction to make. I apologize to Daniela Ponticelli because she has now told me that she works as a play-by-play announcer for the PWHL. So she works for the league in tandem with TSN Sportsnet and CBC. So I just wanted to correct that. She works for the actual league and she's a big reason why the league is doing so well.
It's time for the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League Report here on the Sports Cage. I'm pleased to be joined by the voice of the Humble Broncos, Rory McGoran, here as we get set for game number 7 tonight between the Humble Broncos and the Melford Mustangs. I guess, first off, Rory, thanks a lot for joining us once again here today. I guess, for you, I know it's been a entertaining and a busy playoff so far. How are you holding up and how's the voice holding up?
Voice is fantastic. You know, the fans, us broadcasters, right? Everyone's been treated to, honestly, one of the best series I've ever seen, and I can't wait for Game 7 tonight.
Tons of overtime games, tons of tight matchups, I guess. Overall, I guess if somebody hasn't seen the series, what's a quick synopsis on the opening 6 games?
Well, yeah, we're kind of joking after Game 6 there when it went to double overtime that if Game 7 goes to quadruple overtime,
just wait a few minutes. Do you want me to call him? I'll tell him in 5 minutes.
A double, a single, a triple, and then a quadruple overtime. But, you know, the synopsis is it's razor thin. It's absolutely insane. I've never seen a series that you could easily argue could be a 4-0 sweep for either team, a 5-win series for either team, a 6-win series for either team. And now it's going to Game 7. So someone's going to win it tonight. Every game minus empty net goals have been a 1-goal game. It has been one of the most back-and-forth, momentum-swinging, neither team giving up, and a battle of attrition for these Warriors out there on the ice that are playing now into their 25th, 26th, and 27th periods here in Game 7 of the series. That's 9 games, if you can do quick math.
That's incredible, and I know, especially back in Game 6, I know a comeback in the third period for the Broncos to tie things up, but then kind of got out-muscled, out-schooled in the first overtime period, but just found a way in the second overtime period, and that's what you have to do come playoff time.
Yeah, I was talking to Carter Hansen, our assistant coach, after the game, as we usually do, and he labeled it perfectly. He said, "This is a stubborn bunch of players. They are a stubborn group. They're the youngest team in the playoffs, even going back to when there was 8 teams. There was no one younger than the Broncos, but they're just stubborn. And that's, you know, the epitome of trailing going into the third in 3 straight games and 2 of them needing to win to keep your season alive and coming back and winning. You know, the captain, Cage Newen, longest tenured Bronco on the team, scoring with 47 seconds left. Spencer Bell, regular season goal leader, scoring in overtime. But everyone else, the young 18-year-olds, the 17-year-olds, even the 19-year-olds, you know, just they've had every excuse to take a shift off based off how much they've played. Seven-game series in round one, so much overtime, seven-game series in round two, and they don't. They're a stubborn group, and, you know, it's been a treat to watch, and I'm sure everyone in Melfort's building, Melfort fans and Humboldt building and Humboldt fans have just, you know, whoever wins this, the team that doesn't just needs to be proud of the effort they gave forward.
And going into game number seven tonight in Melfort, what's going to be the biggest key here for the Broncos?
Oh, I mean, they got to shut down the top line, right? That is Melfort's potency, is the Clay Sliva, Ryan Duguay, Aiden Hutchinson line with Olofsson and Freetmar on the point. In Melfort, they haven't been able to do as good of a job. They don't have last change, right, as they have in Humboldt. They've really neutralized them in Humboldt. They only have two power play goals, that line does. No even strength goals in Humboldt. But in Melfort, it's a different story. So you got to find a way to just limit those guys. They play heavy, heavy minutes. So when we talk about the war of attrition, maybe they're at that peak, and you just got to try and wear them down. And then it's just hard plays, mistake-free. You know, Ben Motu, who's played more minutes, made more stops, faced more shots. You know, every stat is in but Ben Motu's favor in terms of the amount he's played. And his numbers are incredible as well. Just, you know, you don't have to make 10 highlight reel saves throughout the game. Just don't let in a weak one. James Venn's thinking the same thing. So the key is kind of mistake-free and the will to win. You know, you got to want it more. You got to find whatever's left. I don't know what's left. I have the broadcaster, and I barely have anything left. But, yeah, you just got to want it more, try to play mistake-free. Hopefully your goaltender is, he's the guy he's been all year, and then shut down the opponent's top threats, and I think Broncos should be fine.
Just last year, Rory, I know you talked about support's been great all postseason. Just talk about both fan bases, just how strong it's been. And I don't know, across the playoffs, and I've seen in the opening series with Battleford and Malford, great fan support. And it just seems like each and every series, each and every match, each and every community has come together and watched playoff hockey, which is great to see across the province.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And I know that it's been like that everywhere. Even in the first round where travel was really favoring no team. Everyone had a long travel stretch in the first round. And the buildings were packed, and the support was amazing. From personal experience, this semifinal series has been, you know, incredible, with the traveling support, buses, fan buses going back and forth, cheering sections from visiting team being louder than home teams, in some circumstances. Like I said, I'm so happy it's going to Game 7, because both communities have just come out in full support, and they've been witness to what I think, in my 6 years now in the SJHL, it's the best series I've ever seen.
Awesome, Murray. Once again, always a pleasure, and get those lossages and the water in you here throughout the day, and best of luck with the call tonight, and should be a great another classic Game number 7 tonight.
Yeah, warming up the vocal cords, playing a little guitar, you know, getting some songs out, getting them stretched out, and we'll be ready to go.
That's the voice of the Humboldt Broncos, Rory McGoran, as the Broncos and Melfort Mustangs get set for game number 7 in their SJHL semifinal tonight. Puck drop will be at 7:30 from the Northern Lights Palace in Melfort. And winner will take on the Flint Flon Bombers in game 1 of the SJHL's Canterra Seeds Cup, starting on Friday at the Whitney Forum. For the SJHL report on the Sports Gauge, I'm Betty Bolchek.
The all-new Sports Cage. Be part of the show. Call 936-6262 or toll-free 1-866-767-0620. 620 CKRM.
And this is Don Hewitt back with the Cage, along with Derek Bidwell in Saskatoon. CKRM Radio, CKCK-TV broadcasting legend Lauren Harrison now joins Sports Cage. He's now a very spry individual in his mid-80s. Lauren arrived in Regina back in 65. Prior to that, he was in other parts of the province in the business. And in no time, Lauren dominated the local airwaves. His audience ratings for his Harrison Line call-in radio program back in the day were in around 100,000, maybe even more than 100,000. I don't really know, but it was in six figures. The glory days, absolute glory days of radio. But he's not only a man of national, provincial, or civil politics. For those who know him, Lauren is a diehard sports fan with a particular interest in the St. Louis Cardinal Baseball Club and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So, Lauren, when was the last time you were on CKRM airwaves?
Well, I've been retired, Don, for about 25 years. It's gone by very quickly.
Yeah. Well,
I, you know, I've kept busy since that time. I keep track of some of you people. I miss your noon hour sportscast on CTV. You have the knack of getting the most information on the air within, what, about 3 minutes?
About that, yep. About that. Maybe they didn't want me any longer than that, though, Lauren.
Well, no, I enjoyed those. I'm sorry they're gone.
Well, one thing I know for sure, the better broadcaster by a mile is on the phone right now and not in the radio studio. That's you, because you're one of the best broadcasters by far in the history of Saskatchewan. No doubt about it. Lauren, let's start off, though, with your sports interests. How did you get interested in the St. Louis Cardinal baseball team?
Well, that would be in the early 50s. I was interested in the fact that they were a National League team that had won most most World Series. They won their first one in 1926.
Yeah.
And they won a World Series in almost every decade except the 50s, and then the 70s they missed, and their last one was in 2011. And as a player goes, I was interested in a couple of them. One was Stan Musial, the slugger, who played very, very well, lived until he was 92 years old, was presented the Presidential Medal of Honor by the President of the United States. And then I was also very interested in a pitcher that the Cardinals had during the 60s, Bob Gibson. He was an intimidating pitcher. Give you a little story about him. He was all business when he got on that mound. He was pitching in the 1968 World Series, and Tim McCarver was the catcher. And they just learned, McCarver learned, that Bob had broken a single-game strikeout record. And he ran out to the mound to tell him this. And Gibson said, "Give me the ball." And McCarver said, "No, look, you've broken a record. I don't care. Give me the ball." And McCarver said, "All these people are standing. They're standing to honor you." And Gibson said, "All right, now go back to where you were." He was tough. I tell you, he'd brush you back with his first pitch, and then you were scared enough to get close to the plate. He's a great pitcher.
Oh, unbelievable. Now, were you sad to hear that just, I think it was yesterday, maybe this morning, that Whitey Herzog died, Cardinal famous manager?
Yes, Whitey was a fine manager for them, and he went on to the Angels, didn't he, after that?
I believe so.
The Cardinals made, you know, one big mistake. Yogi Berra and Joe Garagiola both came from St. Louis. And the Cardinals, when it came time to hire somebody, picked Garagiola. They thought he would be the better player. Well, I think we all know that Yogi was a far better baseball player. Would you believe that Yogi Berra, in five consecutive seasons, had more home runs than strikeouts?
Wow.
You know, his wife said to him at one time, to Yogi, "Yogi, you were raised in St. Louis, and you lived in New Jersey, and now you played in New York. Where do you want to be buried?" He said,
"That's right.
Surprise me."
Lauren Derek Bidwell here in Saskatoon, and you talk about Yogi Berra. Yogi Berra was such an American gem, a baseball gem, a sports gem. If those that are listening haven't had a chance to watch yet or are unfamiliar with Yogi Berra and just how amazing he was as a baseball player, so underrated because of all the goofy stuff that he was kind of did on the side. You know, he was such a character. You know, it's not over till it's over, and nobody goes there anymore because it's too crowded, and the game is whatever. I think it goes. The game is 90% mental and 50% physical, or something like that. I don't know. He had a whole bunch of them, but if you have a chance to watch. And I just did recently a real awesome special on him on Netflix. It is a real good one. And even Gary Zola talks about that he was a good baseball player, but he wasn't even the best baseball player on his street because Yogi Berra also lived on his street. And Yogi Berra was just an amazing baseball player and a great manager as well.
You talk about him being funny. Casey Stengel once said, they say Yogi is funny. Casey said, you know, he's got a nice wife, nice family, a nice home. He's got money in the bank, and he plays golf with millionaires. What's funny about that?
It is. That's good. I'm telling you, Lauren, like, if you haven't had a chance to see it, watch it. It is so good. There's so many things about it that I was unaware of Yogi Berra. And after it was over, if I get a Yankees jersey, I'm getting a Yankees jersey with Yogi Berra's number on the back. Yogi Berra, I think, was number 8. I'm definitely getting Yogi Berra jersey. After that, I just loved him as a personality. He seemed like such a sweet man, a great guy. And that's one thing that everybody talked about, whether it's Derek Jeter or they talked to Billy Crystal during this special, that he was just a beloved, beloved person. And he met anybody, then he had another friend. But another unique storyline to Yogi Berra, and I knew that he... And George Steinbrenner had that falling out, but I didn't know to the extent it went and how long it went on for and how they finally made up at the end. Anyway, it's an amazing one. Last one I'm going to ask you, though, about baseball, Lauren, before we switch over to your love of the Riders and CFL football. Your greatest memory as a Cardinals fan, does it lie back in the Bob Gibson era, like you spoke about? Maybe something with Whitey Herzog. We spoke about him passing recently. Is it the great home run race between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa? Where were you captivated by the Cards?
Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed watching probably one of the best shortstops, you know, with all due regard to Phil Rizzuto and others in you know who I'm talking about.
Ozzie Smith, the Wizard.
Yeah. He was really something, and no, I've just appreciated them. They still have the most World Series championships in the National League. They have 11, and golly, they were terrible last year. They were picked to be first. They wound up at the bottom. I don't know what they're going to do this year. They have great fans. They're very knowledgeable fans, and they're very demanding. They're an awful lot like the Rider fans. They want their people to perform well. And I hope that, in talking about the loyalty of their fans, they've always got a good house. You know,
yes, they do.
They'll pull 40,000 people very easily, and the team could be very mediocre.
Before we switch to the Riders here really quick, have you had a chance, Lauren, to be there for any games in person?
Yes. Donna and I have been there a couple of times. Went most recently about 5 years ago. I wanted to see the new stadium, the new Busch Stadium, and very impressed with the facility.
Nice. It's on my bucket list for sure of baseball parks that I want to visit. Not quite up there with Fenway and Wrigley with the history there, but it is definitely up there as one of the ones that I want to visit. Okay, we'll switch now to the gridiron and ask you, Lauren, about your love for the Riders and your thoughts on the Riders now. Before we ask you about some great stories or something from the past, let's talk about the future. And as we mentioned before, when we were talking to Brett Lawther, kicker, of course, with the Riders. Everybody's very optimistic, and they should be, because no games have been played, so that means we're undefeated.
You have just as good a chance
as anybody else. So your thoughts on this edition of the Riders? Trevor Harris is coming back. Hopefully he has a healthy year. They've made some nice additions. They have a new coach, of course, in Corey Mace. Your thoughts on the Riders?
Yeah, I think the prospects are very good, and I certainly wish them every best thing in the world. They need a break this year, and I think they're going to get it. I think they're going to put something together. The young offensive coordinator is a fine young man, and I know he's going to...
Mark Mueller, yep.
Right? Mark is a very fine young fellow. I'm really impressed mm-hmm. with him. Well brought up and so on, and he's very bright. And, of course, you know, who taught him a lot about football was a fellow by the name of number 23, his grandfather.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm very, you know, hopeful. I've been, you know, we're kind of a football family. We were season ticket holders for 52 years. I was a activity director for about 45 years. My wife worked in the Rider office for about 15 years.
She did.
That's right.
And saved my bacon a few times, but that's another story.
You say Velma?
Velma saved my bacon when Ron Lancaster got upset. In the 2 years he was the head coach, the odd time he wouldn't come out to the television station to do his show, he had no talent, to be honest, and Velma would call me, Lauren, your better half, your wife would call me and say, well, Ronnie's not coming. And I go, really? But Velma always pulled off some other guest that would come in and do the show. So Velma was sensational, Lauren. Your wife was sensational when she worked for the Rough Riders.
My two sons have been coaches. The younger one, Paul, is one of the University of Regina Ram coaches. And Greg, my older son, he coached in the high schools. And as a matter of fact, Paul and his son, my grandson, coach in the early spring part of the minor football program. And then... Paul goes over to the Ram activities. So we've always had an interest in football, always been very active in it, and it goes without saying that the Riders, well, they're something special. I think I learned to love the Riders from my dad.
Mm-hmm.
He would never criticize them. He would never say that the coach should be fired.
That's cool.
Or that anything. It was either the weather or injuries or officiating or whatever. But never would he say that there was anything wrong with them. And, you know, mentioning Velma, she took my dad to a quarterback luncheon a number of years ago. And she introduced him to Ronnie. She said the look on Dad's face was something she'll never forget when he clutched Ron's hand.
Mm.
It was really something very special. Yeah, we've had our, you know, good days and bad days over the years with the Riders going right back, you know, to that plane crash in the 1950s after the All-Star game in Vancouver. You know, I was still a young fellow then at that time, get up every morning after the plane was reported lost, hoping, you know, that someone would say, the newscast would say, they found it and everybody's okay.
Yeah.
Now, as we know, that they never found it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sad time, but we've had those, you know. We've had our tickathons. There were times when the team was in trouble financially, but the people of this province rallied, you know, and got behind them. And it'll always be that way. They'll never let down that team. I can't see that.
No, they won't. Absolutely not learned. Now, how hard did you take it this past fall when George Reed passed away?
Took it quite hard because he was such a good man. You know, he did. He was, just to give you an idea, he was here when he was living in Calgary. He was here for one of the, his golf tournaments, you know, for his foundation. And I called him. I was, at the time, I was doing a feature during the Ryder broadcasts. So I phoned the golf course, called for him, and said, I'd like to do an interview with him. When was he available? Well, he says, come around tomorrow around 9 o'clock around the clubhouse, and we can do it then. The next day, I grabbed my tape machine and went to the golf course, went to the clubhouse. No George. I asked a few people, do you know if he's around? And, geez, somebody said, I thought I saw him a few minutes ago. Anyway, I looked around, and I thought, well, he's busy. It's his golf tournament. So I went home back to the office and thought nothing more about it. The next day, I'm in my office, and the receptionist calls me and says, there's a Mr. Reed here to see you. But that was George, you see. Mm-hmm. He made a promise. He said he'd be available. He wasn't available at the time, but he remembered it. And he came, and he did that over and over again. If you were doing a, you know, a charity thing and you'd like to do something with him, you know, especially with, you know, Special Olympics and that kind of thing, he was always there. I was sorry that he was, you know, not well for so long in his later years. And I'm not surprised. You know, Franco Harris, the running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, was here a number of years ago for an Optimus Sports dinner. And at the time, George had played for 13 years, and Harris couldn't get over that. He said he took that beating that long, because Harris was a running back as well, and he just couldn't get over it. But that was George.
Lauren, I got a quick one here for you, and this is a story I think that you'll find quite enjoyable. You talked about, it reminded me when you said George Reed, when he was a car salesman in Calgary, and I wasn't aware when I was first there, but here's the story. So I'm going to drop some names here as well, too, but I think it adds to the story. I'm not just dropping names to drop names. So I was in Calgary for 15 years as a sportscaster, and we got to know a lot of people there, me and my crew, broadcasting crew. And one of the groups that we got to know was the ownership group that own a country bar called Cowboys. A lot of people know about Cowboys in Calgary. It's a pretty famous spot where a lot of people go, especially during Stampede. Anyway, my birthday was coming up, and they thought it'd be a great idea to get some extra people in the doors, I think, as well. If on March 25th, on my birthday, if they had kind of a bit of a birthday party for me in the side of the country bar. And it was during the NHL lockout, I remember as well, too, because a few of the guys from Saskatchewan came there that were on the Flames that I was friends with, and Robin Regier, Rhett Warner, some of their buddies came there. But somebody said, is there any chance, do you think, Bids, that you could get somebody from the Riders in Calgary to come to your birthday thing? We're going to put green and white streamers all over. We're going to make it a green and white thing because you're from Saskatchewan. We're going to put green and white on the tickets, and we'll give all the money raised to kids sports and anybody from the Riders that you know in Calgary. And then I thought of George Reed, and I just thought, well, you know what? I'm going to find out what car dealership he works at. I'm just going to call and ask. I'm sure he won't do it, and he won't come by, but maybe he will. I called. I talked to George, told him who I was. He did know of me a little bit from my time on television on City TV. Anyway, he agreed to come by. He said he'd come by for an hour. I said, would you be a guest bartender at one of the bars, and he at this country bar? And he did do that. I put him behind there with a friend of mine who is a huge Riders fan.
Cool.
From Saskatchewan. And he was back behind there, and he was guest bartending with George Reed. And he said, I went up to him and I said, how you doing? You having fun? This is the greatest night of my life. George Reed was a great man of the people. Wow. And never mind, did he make my birthday. He made a lot of people's day when he showed up there. He was a real great man. He said he'd come by for an hour. He ended up coming by for about 2 hours. But we're just about out of time, Lauren. Just your greatest, I'll finish it off with this. I want to end it on a happy note. Your greatest memory, your greatest rider's memory, if you got to put one, finger on one, what would that be?
Well, I'd have to put it in two places. The 1966 Grey Cup Championship, which we watched on black and white television, and 1989. Willie Cole and I were doing broadcasts from the Harbour Castle Hotel in Toronto, and that had to be the best Grey Cup game in history. I'm not being a homer. I think if you play it back over and over, it had everything. And those would be the two I would isolate. Just love those guys. Glad they... Hey, isn't it great that the Canadian Football League has named one of its Grey Cup trophies after George?
Yes.
I thought that was wonderful. That's the best.
And a top trophy, too. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
Did a fabulous job. I really liked listening to your stories. You are still, to this day, one of the best broadcasters ever from Saskatchewan. Yep. I'd also like to thank Derek Bidwell in Saskatoon for his great contributions on the show today. And that's about it for Sports Cage. Tomorrow, Brendan McGuire will be back in the Sports Cage big chair. That's it for Sports Cage. Have a good night, everybody.